at 590. The Fan.
Show by saying, yeah, what Kanye said, but the podcast listeners, unless they're listening to Oxcord Friday and the playlist that Blake has put together on Spotify every week, that's too open for interpretation. So, hello, it's Friday. It's the Fan Morning Show. Hello.
Wait, would good morning have been too difficult for the spot for the podcast crowd to figure out?
It's a lot of stuff. By the way, I like that now the thing with Kanye is that I wasn't really aware of Julia Fox's personal life until she dated Kanye.
Whoa.
And either he rubbed all the crazy off on her, like either he was like, hey, I leave crazy wakes and the crazy ripple effects have now smoked your side of the boat and you're... But now I'm like, every second story I read is either Johnny... Did you guys know who Johnny Depp's girlfriend was before this trial?
No.
I had no idea who Amber Heard was. I think she's in Aquaman.
Oh, I knew who Amber Heard was, yeah.
Yeah, she's in like Pineapple Express and stuff.
Wait, what was she in Pineapple Express?
She's Seth Rogen's teenage girlfriend.
I don't remember that. I only remember Danny McBride in Pineapple Express.
The Unkillable.
The Unkillable Danny McBride. And there was a couple good moments in that movie I think that were good. Overall, I think that's a very overrated stoner comedy.
Does not hold up well on rewatch. Not even in terms of like timing. It just like this is not as funny as I thought when I was smoking a lot of weed in high school.
That's what I mean. Is like it came around at a time where many of us were smoking a lot of weed, and there used to be a point in time in everyone's life where just because it was weed related, it was funny. You know, it was like I also smoke weed, and this is a movie, so obviously it's good. And I
To keep it with those guys, the Jonah Hill. Oh yeah, weed is tight. Weed is tight.
Yeah, weed is tight. Yeah, exactly. Although that movie is underrated.
That movie is underrated.
Rules. Yeah. That movie kicks total ass. Especially when you learn out that it's based on the fracturing of their real friendship, the two stars in the movie, which is actually a cool added layer. But either way, I was never aware of Amber Heard. This is where my Instagram, just for whatever reason, just basically changes my life view because it tells me that I have to care about certain celebrities. And now Julia Fox, Kanye West's, I guess, girlfriend for like a week, one whole week during Kanye's peak fighting with his ex-wife and Pete Davidson. Now every day I get an update on what's going on with Julia Fox and who she's scrapping with these days. And I go, I just want to let my Instagram feed know I don't care. I wish there was a setting where you could mute words like you do with Twitter. Maybe there is. Maybe some youth could tell me how to operate the machines better. But I just got to tell you, Amber Heard, I don't care. I like some of the Johnny Depp memes, I guess. Like when he's doing the whole grab his face, I like that. I screenshotted one of those. That's all I've gotten use out of the entire thing. I'm good.
I got to say, these social media algorithms are accurate enough to like give us ads that are targeted at us, or like, hey, we say something on the air today and then later that's a sponsored thing in my feed. These algorithms, if they're smart enough to do that, they're smart enough to know what we don't like.
By the way,
stop sending me that stuff.
Blake, stop making them sound like they're you working hard with numbers. They're smart enough. It's like, no, they're just listening to us. They're just, when you say smart enough, you mean invasive enough.
Look, and we surveillance capitalism is bad, but if we accept that there's nothing we could do about it, it's going to be omnipresent, then it can at least do a good job of it. Do a better job of it.
This is a really weird start to the show today. I didn't think I'd be talking about Julia Fox and my feelings on how we have sacrificed our privacy and our data at no expense. But here we are. So moving on. I have one other topic before we move to sports. So brace yourself, nerds. I saw Ailish shopping for her, you're not a bridesmaid, but you felt the need to be like, I'm in the wedding. That's how your Instagram story looks. You know, you got invited to a wedding and then you went like, I'm in a wedding. And I was like, nah, you're just getting a dress.
Okay,
relax.
Hold
you
know, on. Like, no.
Yeah, you're a seat filler.
Yeah, yeah.
I was invited to a wedding last minute.
Buys a seat filler. Yeah.
And as it being last minute, tomorrow, I didn't have a dress, so I went.
You posted like a wedding dress. You were like, it's my day. It's coming up.
What? I posted a photo of the store where I went to buy dresses, and there are 100 dresses in the background. I did not post me in a dress. I posted the store. It's a very nice aesthetic place.
Yeah,
and yes, I am invited to a wedding last minute, and okay. I needed to get a dress.
Yeah. My point of curiosity here is, do you think it's harder for guys or girls to buy clothes for a wedding? Like
girls, 1,000%.
I disagree.
Kate, well, let me run this by you. Yesterday, I'm at this dress store where there's hundreds of colors and fits and styles.
I know,
and what is it? Black tie? Is it formal? Is it cocktail? What's the length? What's the fit? What's the color scheme? Then it's how appropriate is it? How much
what's
skin
the color
is showing?
Scheme?
Oh yeah, you think of these things like it's JD. It's a May wedding. You don't show up in dark burgundies and navies, but it's also not a summer wedding where you're wearing pinks and florals. You have to bridge that little bit of a gap into the seasons. Then you need to match your heels and your accessories and your jewelry. Then you got to figure out how you're going to wear your hair. There's a lot of things that go into being a wedding guest for a woman. You guys throw on a suit.
First of all,
you gel your hair back, slick back.
Gel. Hey, this
you
is
you call this slicked back?
Yeah, this is pushed back. This is pushed back. And first of all, way to make me think about the old days of Dippity Doo, where you just got like a jar of gel, and there was no one ever really taught you what the appropriate amount of gel was. It was just some.
Less. Less is the appropriate amount of gel.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, it was kind of a trial and error situation for those first little while with using gel. And the only way that you knew that it was too much was, well, Blake's right. It was pretty much always. But those days where you would go to school and you'd go look in the mirror, your head would be a rock and your friends would be like, whoa, what's going on here? And you.
Nice helmet.
You didn't know until it was too late. That was a bad one.
Yeah, this was a fun when people were doing the like, oh, the last time the Leafs won a playoff series like this and this, and I'm looking at photos, and I'm like, ah, that's really spiky colored hair that you couldn't move with like 100-mile-an-hour wind.
And Blake had
so
his like eyebrow pierced or something, right?
No, I have my LeBray pierced.
LeBray.
Yeah.
My LeBray pierced. No eyebrow.
Tough. Yeah. Eyebrow. Oof. What do you think is the most? What do you think is the most doesn't hold up piercing that dudes had in the? I would say eyebrow is up there. Like I would say eyebrow for a guy. I don't know any guys who had tongue piercings, but I would say if I did know a guy with a tongue piercing, that would be number one. If I
JD,
did,
you strike me as a considered a nip piercing guy.
Oh, 100%.
I wish, because I actually think that nip piercings are eternal. That's just cool. I think nip piercings on guys or girls, eternally cool. That's just my thought. That holds up. I'm saying this one doesn't hold up. To me, it's like the septum one, where it's like the little bull ring
would be tough. That's the phase right now for girls.
Yeah, that's tough phase.
A lot of people have the little septum thing.
Yeah,
going
let's
on.
Not do that. Let's not. I like it when girls have the one that's like the side of the nose, little
like a
small
side
ring.
Nose piercing. Yeah,
side nose piercing, still hot to this day. No complaints. Through the middle, big complaints. Think that eyebrow piercing is number one. Doesn't hold up. I think that's the number one. Doesn't hold up for dudes, unless you're counting people who did spacers in their ears. To which I would say,
no.
There is just no way. Wooden spacers, and I can still smell those. Okay, that's too far. That's too far. Okay, it's Friday, okay? It's Friday. I'm allowed to do what I want. It's Friday, okay? It's Friday. Yes.
Should be a new rule in Toronto sports that as long as we're doing this show, there can't be a Thursday without sports. Because Friday show is going to be off the rails.
I actually have a lot of sports stuff today. I just needed to get this off my chest because I saw Ailish's thing where she's like, I'm the bride. And I went, okay, this is my thought on whether. And now, but Ailish, you made such a convincing case because I've never considered the color scheme of the wedding. I think about what tones.
Things.
Yeah, and I think that for dudes, there's more than you're appreciating. I really do.
I'm sure you have a navy suit, a black suit, and a lighter suit for spring, summery things.
How dare you when you saw that my last fit to a wedding was like a green gray with white pants and with a different kind of a brand new set of loafers, pocket squared. I decided no tie. Like, there was all kinds of different decisions that went into that outfit. However, I never once thought, what's the color scheme of the wedding? And I feel like you just mentioning that is so far beyond what I would have ever thought of thinking of a wedding that I have no leg to stand on here, that I'm just going to concede this to you. Like, I've always said, you need to be able to shift your opinion based on more information coming in. And
except when it comes to Honeycrisp apples.
Oh my God, you Apple losers, stay out of my mentions. Also, the Fuji crowd is silent. The Fuji crowd is quiet. They're limping.
Well,
they
don't want the guillotines out.
No, I know, that's what I mean. They're afraid.
You say Fuji.
That's because you were trying to get the Fiji Apple crowd, and they don't exist.
I know. The amount of people that were like upset at me, like to a really high degree, over not knowing the Fuji or Fiji instead of Fuji.
Because you said that you were the number one Fiji Apple connoisseur.
You talked
world.
About Fiji water right before the segment, and I got Fiji fault. In my head. That's right. It is your fault. You gaslit me.
Anyway,
it worked. Congrats.
So I would agree with Ailish that it's tougher for a woman. I will say there, like you're saying, JD, there are some underrated parts of difficulty for a man. I would also I would say, especially this time of year when it's not warm enough for like a thin linen suit yet, but it's a little too warm, especially if it's a daytime ceremony, to go with like a full regular. So you've got to start considering then, okay, are you ditching the jacket at some point? Are you linen pants and a
What's
regular
the
jacket?
Overcoat situation?
Like, you got to mix.
Girls have a million coats. They know. They go, I have a dress. I can wear a coat over top of it. I got this already lined up. This is an easy thing for us. We don't have that thing. All we know is, well, what's a nice jacket over top of a suit? Well, it's a pea coat. Well, it's spring. It's too warm for that. So what am I supposed to do? Freeze all night? It's like, yes, that is the correct answer. You will not be bringing a coat to anything.
You know you're going to be out on the balcony at some point with a cigar. Yeah. Are you going to be frozen or are you going to be sweaty?
Yeah.
Last thing to consider that girls have to consider is the walking situation, how far to and from and around the venue and how high your heels should be and when you'll be taking your shoes off for dancing, and also where the venue is in terms of, is it in a city? Will you be on grass? Can you be wearing pointy heels?
Okay, but everyone going to the wedding has to consider where it is.
No, it's different. If you're walking through the sod at the apple orchard with the sprinkler systems, you need to think that your heel situation can't be the pointy stilettos. They need to be thicker, wider heels. So, yes, I will I'll give you a full lesson on what it's like to be a girl going to the wedding if you stay tuned Saturday afternoon, 4 p.m.
This is what I'm saying, is that nobody considers us, you know, the men, the dudes, that it's always about you guys on wedding
day. History will show that there was not enough consideration for men in the world.
We have been slightly inconvenienced for
this is what I'm saying.
A tiny percentage
really tough for men.
Nobody talks about what we go through, okay? And what we go through is hard. And now, especially, that's the thing too. Yeah, that might work for a wedding in a smaller town where you're just like Navy or whatever. But here in Toronto, it's tougher. It's harder to do, all right? There's a higher
standard. Harder in the Instagram era, too, right? That's you can't have people going back and be like, does this guy only own two suits and he just goes 50-50 split?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see? That's
what
I'm saying.
Is he just running a piggyback system with his suits? What's going on?
Hey, Blake, thanks, bro. Bro supporting bros over here. That's
like
what
I told you.
About. Yeah.
I can make the data say whatever you want.
Yeah, and the data says that I'm flipping back off of my take that it was right, and I'm back to are we giving
whatever
enough
makes
credit
you
for
happy.
The things that we do? And this hair is pushback. Okay, so this weekend the Toronto Blue Jays are playing the Cincinnati Reds. Country weekend. It's going to be a fun weekend down at the ballpark. I think the weather was what I said yesterday because I'm Mr. Weather Network, and I make sure, like, I'm not using my Apple Weather Network, okay? I go to the real source, which is the Weather Network. You can really never trust Ontario weather. It's summer, so then everything starts to fluctuate. But, yeah, tonight's supposed to be hot. It's supposed to be beautiful this weekend. Everything looks like it should be some open dome. Cincinnati Reds coming to town. Blue Jays have only won 3 of their last 10 games. And I've mentioned this to you guys before, how, hey, there have been some starts this year that have been more important than others for some of these starting pitchers, right? There have been some nights. It's usually never a night where it's more important for a batter, But this is the one where I'm kind of entering the series and saying, yeah, I don't really care that Hunter Green is pitching. This kind of has to be one where the Jays come out of this again and go 2-3, maybe 3-0. And if they come out of this losing the series, I think that we're going to be talking on Monday, late May, getting close to June, and that the takes are going to start to increase in terms of the spiciness. We talked to David Sampson yesterday, and Blake asked him a really good question, which was, hey, when do you as a front office start to take this information? And he said, June, mid-June, right? We're not that far away. And if you can't beat the Cincinnati Reds in late May, I think that's kind of telling of some of your issues. I don't know what some of the status updates on the true health or the true nature of health are for some of these players. But yeah, I feel like if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. comes out of this series without an extra base hit, if George Springer hits mediocre, if Lourdes Gurriel Jr. plays and continues at his 600 OPS rate, if Teoscar Hernandez continues to struggle and find himself post-injury, I think that it's going to start to be a ramp-up weekend where a lot of people are going to go down to the ballpark. It's going to be really nice. There's going to be butts in the seats, and people are going to have their expectations, and it feels kind of like Brios' last start where he needed a good one, or Kikuchi's first start against the Yankees where he needed a good one. This feels like a small minor pivot moment for the Jays. They got to win some ball games this weekend.
I don't even know if I would say a small minor one. I think if you can string together some wins here against a pretty lowly Cincinnati Reds team, even though they are my favorite team in the league, I think it just really gives you that momentum to start getting back to where you need to be. And I know Hunter Green was the guy I talked about last week on the A-list that basically had the no-hitter that they ended up losing. Hey, he's still a really good pitcher, so, and he's a rookie, so there's a little bit there for Alek Manoah when they match up against each other on Saturday. But I do feel like there's a lot actually riding on the Jays this weekend to change the narrative, to get everything going at the same time, like the pitching, the bullpen, and the offense all working together. What a great weekend to do that against a team that really shouldn't be giving you much fight.
And I'm not going to be, you know, it's not the end of the world if they take 2 out of 3 in this series because it's baseball and stuff happens in games. But
that's
if
what I'm saying.
They
got to win this series.
And if they don't beat the brakes off of this pitching staff, it's a problem. So the Jays are 14th in ERA as a team. The gap between them and the Dodgers in first, so first to 14th, that's the same gap as the Cincinnati Reds to the next worst team in ERA. The Reds are allowing 6 earned runs per 9. God. They walk almost 5 batters per 9. Like, we have not seen a team give up runs at this rate in a really long time. They play, like, some of the, you can get into some of the component stats too. You don't really need to when a team has a 5.88 ERA, but their staff does a lot of stuff that should play to the Jays' favor in Rogers Center. Like, this team has no ground ball pitchers. It's all fly ball guys. It's all guys you can drive the ball off of, and even their good exciting pitchers like Hunter Green's really cool. I like watching him pitch. He has an ERA over 6. Luis Castillo is their ace. He's a potential Jays target from last year. His ERA is almost 6. Connor Overton starting on Sunday, and he has an ERA under 2, but over is right in his name. How are you not betting the over in that one?
That's good.
Over a ton. It's over a ton. It's not even over a little. It's not over little. It's over a ton. No, this
like
is
if
exactly
they come out of this weekend,
about.
If they come out of this weekend scoring fewer than 15 runs, that's not that high. 5 a game against a team with an ERA of 6. But that's like 15 runs over 3 games would be amazing for the Jays based on the last couple weeks. So the bats better get going.
About. This is what I'm talking about. Is that. This is we've done this thing recently where it's become actually cliche to bring it up, but what you do against bad teams matters now. It used to be, oh, you don't get evaluated on that, but what we've actually learned, I don't know if this counts as analytics, but from a data standpoint, is that you beating the brakes off of bad teams is actually a really good indicator of whether or not you are a good team. And if you're the Toronto Blue Jays, given that you're 3-7 and you're mired in a slump, this is kind of the time that you'd like to see a little bit of progress.
If you miss the playoffs by one game, do you come back and circle? I know. But it happened.
Yeah, I do that more at the end of the year where I look at the larger pictures rather than night in, night out. But I agree.
You're still sweating that one semi-an error from last year.
No, yeah, just you might be. But I hated the semi-an error take from last year because he was so good for the Blue Jays that it was just as if that was the guy that got plucked. But I get it. That was a tough one, and they lost that game solely because of that moment. But either way, all I'm saying about this weekend is that The Jays, I think, have been given a pretty large grace period in terms of the way they've performed. We looked at those one-run victories early on in the season and gave them a ton of credit for it. We've been giving Vladimir Guerrero Jr. no flack in the fact that he's basically been slumping because he's on a hit streak that has completely papered over his struggles. Bo Bichette has found himself, but we went basically an entire month of bad Bo where we went, no big deal, it's Bo, it's baseball, it's going to regress. The Jays so far have been underwhelming for what we were expecting from this baseball team this season. There's been, I would say, two things that have completely lived up to the hype, and that has been Gausman and Manoah. And the rest of the roster, it's like, okay, what has overperformed? I would say Santiago Espinal, and now you say Kikuchi has overperformed. The rest of the roster, would you say, is there any other point? There's any other player that
Zach
has
Collins.
Overperformed? Yeah, sure, you're right. Zach Collins probably, and I can't remember the last time he played. It was a couple of days ago, but even still, it's like now he's back to being this team's third catcher. My point is that there have not been a lot of players that have done more than what was expected of them. There have been a lot of players who haven't met that. We've met that with, well, they've had a hard schedule, and they've had baseballs that haven't been juiced. They've changed the ball, blah, 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 blah. It's been only May. It's now the Cincinnati Reds. We're getting close to June. This is a series that, yeah, I think the tone will shift if they come out of this sucker and having lost two of three.
Yeah, and you're only two games. Ailish, you made the point of, like, do you really want to be sitting there at the end of the season and looking back at this stuff? And guess what? We're only a quarter of the way in. You're already eight games back of the Yankees. You're already three games back of hosting a wild card, and you're only one game up on losing a wild card spot altogether. And it's too early to worry about one or two games here or there, but the division is like you would need a dramatic turnaround to even start thinking about the division come July at this point.
Yeah.
And worst of all, they're two games over 500. And JD, you make the point about beating up on bad teams, is their underlying stats suggest they should be worse. They should be two games under 500 probably, because they've done the thing where they just skate by bad teams and then occasionally get their butts kicked by good teams. They're minus 12 run differential this year. Like, they haven't been a good baseball team, and it's time to get going, because it's one thing to think on 2015, where they were 500 at the time of the Tulo acquisition, but they had like the best run differential in the league, and there were all these flashing signs that were like, they're better than the record, they're better than the record, be patient, they're better than the record. And right now, if you were to play that game, it would be like, well, they're worse than the record, they're worse than the record. The White Sox maybe going to catch them on their tails. Cleveland maybe going to catch them on their tails. So you got to start turning this thing around, not only for the standings, but for that internal belief of, hey, this is a playoff team, and you got to get going.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with what you just said more. The other component with the 2015 still to me is always that the rest of the American League sucked at that time. It was totally the right time to pounce. And right now what you're seeing is, I believe anyways, that the American League might be a little bit better than people anticipated. That this is a bit of
at
a
least
stronger,
at the top.
Yeah, that it's a little stronger at the top than people originally thought. This Yankees team that we went, oh, they're old and they don't really figure it out and they do the other thing. They look really, 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 really good. And I'm actually still waiting for Vladdy to have some days like Aaron Judge has been having lately.
We also have the thing where for years everyone's looked at the Angels roster and been like, they should be awesome. But they underperform so often that you almost forget that, oh, yeah, they have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. So, of course, they're 24-16. Like, of course they're beating the brakes off. I think they have the best run differential in the league other than the Yankees. Of course the Angels are a threat. They finally figured it out. You get 10 cracks at having a Mike Trout MVP season, you're eventually going to make the playoffs.
Okay, so bigger weekend for the Jays, I guess, is the way that I'm trying to frame this, is that you see the Cincinnati Reds coming to town. It's an interleague game. It's a crappy team, even though they've won 7 of their last 10 games. The Jays have won 3 of their last 10 games. Completely different directions, completely different expectations. That these games still matter a lot, and I think that it matters for the Jays from a narrative standpoint right now, and just an overall team vibes standpoint right now. My other thing is, from last night, how are you guys feeling about the Tampa Bay Lightning being up 2-0 on the Florida Panthers? And the way that it makes you feel about the Toronto Maple Leafs? Has it impacted you in any way?
Yes. Yesterday, I didn't feel the way I felt, because last night's game was like a dagger to the heart. If you missed it, Tampa wins with, at first it was 0.9 seconds.
Yeah.
At first, when they blew it, it was at 0.9 seconds. Ross Colton is going to be the Conn Smythe winner, apparently. But yeah, it ends up being a 4 second. They put 4 seconds back on the clock. Yeah. And Tampa is steamrolling Florida. Like, I don't understand where Florida went, who Florida is, but they were frauds. So if you look at the way that this series seems to be shaking out, they're up 2-0. It really just solidifies the fact that if the Leafs had beat Tampa, I honestly don't know who was standing in their way to the end. Like, they would have, I think they could have easily handed Florida at least a couple games, maybe a 4-2 series lead. Like, they don't look good at all. So it makes me feel worse, actually, this morning waking up thinking about what could have been.
Yeah, I'd agree with that for sure. Like, I had a feeling this was going to happen anyway. I've been on Tampa since early in the series, like the series prices ahead of time and stuff, and then being dogs these first two games. Yes, there was the concern of, like, maybe you're banged up from that 7-game series, but they are
or
so
the concern
significantly
that they went so deep and, like, they're tired. Yeah. And, like, those were real considerations that I had, but it doesn't seem
they
to be
were.
That way.
And it's not like they beat the brakes off the Panthers last night. Like, it was a 2-1 game. They scored 4 seconds left, but at no point did I really feel like, other than that one non-goal that Vasilevsky kind of let in that was a little shaky, but like, Vasilevsky looks like he's back to Vasilevsky now. Like, 35 saves again last night. The Lightning don't look particularly pressed by the Panthers, and JD, you and I said this, is the Panthers' only opportunity really to do some damage in the series was to win these first two, because now Tampa gets the double off day. They get that weird schedule quirk where, hey, the team that's played 9 games in the last 17 days and just beat you twice in a row, now they get a little break, and then they get to play at home twice. So Florida's toast.
So I guess I'm not really looking at the Leafs hypothetical cups. I do think there's an interesting conversation about accountability, which I'm going to get to in a second here, about opportunity cost, that if you really do believe the Leafs should have gone deep these last 2 years and they both got bounced in the first round, what is the measure of, hey, is there added, there should be added pressure on this team or added belief that there should be more accountability amongst the people who are running the show here or the players or wherever you kind of want to lay the blame for this, that this fan base is, I think, a little divided right now in terms of how to feel. To me, there's a large level of disappointment amongst everybody, but that looking at the teams ahead was always a part of why it felt urgent for the Maple Leafs for me, right? Yeah. It was always, hey, they need to win now because they are in their prime window and some teams are slipping out of theirs while other teams are not quite there yet, like the Rangers. And to me, the Panthers actually fit right in that. I never really bought that the Panthers were there. I will say this. I think that the Panthers, there's a familiarity with the Lightning and the ghost thing with the Panthers, I think, is kind of real. This is where I look at, had the Leafs played Boston, and go, maybe it wouldn't have been as straightforward as you think. There are just sometimes franchises that own you. And so I don't look at Florida and Toronto and drop in Tampa's results and say they automatically would have been Toronto's. I think to me it's more about trying to evaluate what happened in that Toronto series and using this data set to try to look backwards at what happened with Toronto. And I would say that I mostly still remain unchanged. Is Tampa doing what they did moving forward does not change the way that I view the Tampa team that played Toronto in round one. And maybe that will continue to evolve. I stand by how I felt in the moment. I stand by the numbers that I looked at throughout that series where it was, yes, absolutely a coin flip series, but that Toronto really had an opportunity to win that sucker. And I do think that it went beyond simply just saying, well, they got some bad puck luck or some bad officiating and some bad whatever, like just throwing it into the ether of this was a bad bounce for this team. And I think that that attitude that we talked about, the bad bounce attitude, was very pervasive amongst the front office when we heard them speak the other day. And people said, well, JD, what did you want to hear them say, right? They said, JD, what did you want them to say? Did you want them to go up there and say that they're losers? This is the extreme straw man thing. And yesterday I heard Cam Neely speak, for the Boston Bruins. And again, this is an organization that has won. This is an organization that has handed Toronto three of those Game 7 losses since 2013. And granted, I know we don't count 2013 anymore because it's a different era, but whatever. Two, at the very worst. This was Cam Neely yesterday discussing the way he will be evaluating his team after a disappointing Game 7 loss and his coach, Bruce Cassidy.
I think we have to look at making some changes as far as how we play and the way we do some of the things. I think Bruce is a fantastic coach. I mean, he's brought a lot of success to this organization. I like him as a coach, so we'll see where it goes. But I do think we need to make some changes, and I think Bruce a couple days ago alluded to that. So we'll see where that goes.
Does that sound incendiary to you? Does that sound like burn it down? Does that sound unfair in any way, shape, or piece? All I'm saying is that this is a coach who has accomplished more than Sheldon Keefe. This is an organization that has accomplished more than the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is a market that is extremely hard on its players. I mean, less so because, again, they've experienced success, but it's a very hard market. I think we would all agree, Boston, from a coverage standpoint, in terms of there's two sports media stations in that, two sports radio stations in that city. There's multiple podcasts. There's an incredible amount of eyeballs on that team. It's different. It's a different kind of coverage, but there's a lot of coverage. And he goes out and says those things, which is, hey, we've got a lot of things to evaluate, and that includes our head coach, and we lost, and so we need to look at how to change things, versus the Toronto Maple Leafs, which came out and sounded nothing like that. I'm just saying that there is a way of doing this that people make it seem like these two extremes. Like, the only thing that Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan could have done when they were at the podium was to simply say, we're failures and losers and we'll blow it all up, or be what they were, which was self-righteous and defensive. Listen to what Cam Neely had to say there. I think that struck a really great tone. And I know we're not trying to just evaluate on who wins the media conferences. Like, who cares ultimately? Go out there and win the offseason, go out there and win the playoffs, go out there and win the regular season. But to not be a little bit more self-reflective in the moment after another Game 7 loss when you've experienced that over and over and over again, and this is kind of something that I'm saying to the fan base as well, is to me a little short-sighted and a little, obtuse.
There's nothing in what Cam Neely said there that you can't, however the offseason goes, you would understand those comments within the context of the offseason. Like, I think, hey, I believe in this coach and I think he's a good coach, but we didn't get the job done and I need to take some time to evaluate that, is a perfectly reasonable thing for him to say. And if you, the extended parts of that presser yesterday, the contrast that stood out most to me was how the respective groups handled questions about the power play failures. And
that's
the Leafs
play
were
next.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Then I won't get into it until you play it.
The only comment I had on the Cam Neely comments on head coaching is that, they've had the same head coach since 2016. And so that's a little bit different in terms of like experience and what he's accomplished in that time. But I even think that adds more weight to what he said, because he has had proven success. It's not like a coach you've plopped in that's still a rookie coach, which is kind of an excuse that we're getting with Sheldon Keefe's performance. It's like, this guy has done this and we didn't do it now. So you almost have higher expectations for them to get back to that level. Whereas Sheldon Keefe, it's like, hey, you know, he's still getting his feet wet. He's still trying to learn the process. And I think that for them, for Boston to come out and say that, like, that's exactly what I wanted from the Leafs. I didn't want, hey, yeah, we're going to sweep house. But I wanted there to be a little bit of intrigue in the off season that things could happen. And we're not shutting the door on day one on May 16th to say, nope, no changes are going to happen. Yeah. You as a Leafs fan have to sit all summer long and feel questioning about, well, what's going to change that's going to make me excited for the games to start in October, whereas Boston left that door open, and I really like that.
Again, I still think the Leafs are very open to making changes to their roster, and that them not announcing mm-hmm. that at the podium, they've done a good job at hiding that or veiling that if that is not the
case. Yeah, but I mean, like, leadership is really important. Yeah, that's
exactly
in
terms of that they have kind of gone, hey, this isn't on us. We've done everything we can, and our yes. process is working, and everything that we're doing is working and operating correctly. And you heard Dubas say that when he talked about finding the contracts within the margins and only referencing the two that worked out well for him and not the ones that didn't. You heard that in Brandon Shanahan immediately giving the endorsement for the team and saying that they've done great. You heard that in them talking about their head coach as a future Hall of Famer rather than someone who hasn't been out of the first round. Like you just did. You saw that they may be more open to changing things and tweaking things as time goes on. But as of right now, there was a defensiveness to their press conference about the way that they do things. And yeah, Blake, to your point, is this is what I was going to play next about the power play, is when they were asked about that, they didn't have a very good answer. Listen to the difference in terms of Cam Neely talking about his team struggles with the power play.
Well, you look at playoff hockey on the road, you've got to think 5-on-5, your top guys are going to get shut down. So your power play's got to come through. Your depth's got to come through. Game 7, I wasn't really happy with our game at all. I didn't think it was anywhere near our best game that we could have played as a team. We had one power play, and that was them putting the puck over the glass, so we didn't draw any penalties. And our secondary scoring kind of dried up on us. You need that in the playoffs, especially on the road.
Yeah, the playoff comments, like, we're seeing that as well with the Panthers. They're 0-25 on the power play in the playoffs. So this point is even more solidified because they're down 2-0 in the series. If 0-25 on the power play, they haven't scored since April 29th on the power play. He's hitting it. Like, that could have swayed the series for them. It's going to possibly sway the series for the Florida Panthers. It certainly swayed the series for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So you got to come out and own that. Like, you need to say, like, we need to be better in special teams. Like, special teams exist to give you an edge against your opponent. And if you're unable to do that, it's a type of failure, really. And, like, it's not all on that, but it's certainly something you can circle as a reason that you failed in the playoffs.
Yeah, and certainly over one series, one time, it can be a small sample blip, right? Like, you had mm-hmm. some misfortune, the goalie got hot or whatever. But this has been a pretty consistent thing of, hey, this elite offense and this elite special teams unit doesn't play up to the same level in the postseason when an opponent can sit down and really game plan for it and take you out of your game. And there's a trickle-down effect to power play success, too, where you look at how physical Tampa was in that series and how much of the kind of clutching and grabbing stuff they were willing to risk doing. And early in the series, yeah, everything was getting called. If the Leafs dominate on the power play, I think you probably make an opponent second guess a lot of that stuff. And then that opens up some 5-on-5 stuff for you. And there's a trickle down there. But if you're not punishing the penalty taking, then that empowers a team like Tampa Bay, who has a lot of experience towing the playoff line. It empowers them to keep doing that. And I think that's why, like, I would think Cam Neely's particularly frustrated because Boston's been on the other side of that, where they use that to their advantage and they know how important that is to them winning. It's interesting because you hear this from Cam Neely, who, you know, he's not a hockey lifer. He's an actor. He was in Dumb and Dumber, Dumb and Dumber 2, Me, Myself, and Irene. And then you got these hockey guys on the Leafs side that you think they'd understand it a little more. Ailish, we got some positivity coming or what?
Oh, hell yeah. Do we have some positivity? The A-list, a star-studded A-list. Who's coming to Toronto to be the next face of your favorite professional basketball league? That's on the other side of the break. It's the A-List on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's my aux cord Friday, everybody. Go check it out on Blake's Spotify. It's called The Fan Morning Show aux cord Friday. Is that the name of the playlist?
The Fan Morning Show Oxcord Friday playlist, yeah.
Nice. Super creative. But you'll find it there. It's easy to find. You can hear my playlist today. That was a little J. Cole bringing you in for a very specific reason. It's the A-List.
Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong. Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
As the world's largest Raptors 905 fan, remember I was the only one to attend one of their games this season, Bing Bonga.
Correct.
I am so excited to share my heart with another professional men's basketball team in the city, the Scarborough Shooting Stars of the CEBL. Hot off the press, folks, a new signing, superstar rapper J. Cole. You know, you've heard him. Signing a contract with the local team. A 6'3" guard, 37 years old, played high school in North Carolina. Also tried out for St. John's University as a college walk-on sophomore. Didn't make the team, despite being one of the 10 callbacks. Participated in the NBA All-Star Game, famously pulling off an alley-oop dunk over Kevin Hart. Last year, played in the
over
basketball
Kevin Hart, like that's a thing.
hey, it was over somebody. Last year, started his professional basketball career playing in the Basketball Africa League, where he averaged 1.7 points, 1.7 rebounds, and one assist in three games. Now, Blake, I know you have the scouting report on the CEBL and also on J. Cole.
Sure.
So how... Give us a rundown how he's going to fare. Is he a superstar in the making?
Just be happy with your life, J. Cole. Like, just be happy with your life. You're one of the greatest rappers of all time. Like, enough with this. Like, people keep talking about this as though... I'm sorry, Blake. I can't indulge this fantasy any longer for J. Cole. Like, it's too much. Like... People, it's so inspirational that he continues to follow his dream. This guy wrote an entire album off of like his aspirations to now become a 37-year-old professional basketball player. He went down to the Africa League and averaged 1 point. He's like a good basketball player, but relative to all of us, he is never going to be an NBA player. And the idea that this is some kind of an inspirational tale is incorrect. This is privilege. This is a guy who's a rich celebrity, so he gets these cracks and opportunities to do this stuff. Like J. Cole, just be happy with your life, for God's sakes. It's too much. Go play Breck League like the rest of us. You're not a pro.
So J. Cole's not a pro level basketball player, of course. Back when
he's playing professional basketball.
He's a 6'3" 40-year-old. Like, it's over. Like, it's over for you.
Okay.
Like, you're all the rest of us.
I think it's like from the J. Cole perspective, like, fine, whatever. It's cool. The CBL
it's not cool. That's what I'm saying. It's not cool.
It's cool for him.
Not cool. No, it's not.
It's cool for the growth of that league, though. People are going to want to go see the Scarborough Shooting Stars.
Yeah. The CBL season probably overlaps enough with OVO Fest this year that J. Cole knows he's going to be in Toronto for a couple weeks. Get a couple games in. It's a nice little publicity thing. That team's owned by OVO Nico, so there's obviously the connection there. But what I got to say is, what a great first move for rookie Scarborough GM Brady Heslip, former Canadian national team player, former Raptors 905 guy. He leaves basketball to go get his MBA at Queen's University, Smith School of Business, where I graduated from as well. And then first swipe at the GM role, he lands J. Cole. And
how are you ever going to top that?
Well, I'm just thinking, like, if you're the CBL, if you're the Scarborough Shooting Stars, like, yes, people know the CBL exists. It gets coverage on CBC. You've got good people like Vivek and Javon Shepard and Sean Woodley covering the team or covering the teams and trying to get the league out there. But if you didn't know that this existed or you didn't know that it was available streaming and you want to grow the league in a rookie franchise, what better way than, hey, we have J. Cole, and if you tune in, maybe you'll get to laugh at J. Cole for 5 minutes in garbage time. Excellent move by Brady Heslip, future NBA GM, already ready to crown him. Also, I'd be shocked if at some point this year Heslip doesn't become the first player/GM in the league. He's still like 32 and was the best shooter in the world at one point. Heslip and J. Cole, two-man game, let's see it.
Sure.
their opening game.
You hate me so much for
Thursday, May 26th.
But it's okay. Turning into like an actual basketball story. It's J. Cole. It's a publicity for a league that will never be anything. It's like, great.
Thursday,
like,
May 26th.
But yeah.
Opening game.
Go ahead.
Can't wait. That's next week.
Unless J. Cole's performing, I don't care. You know, like if J. Cole's doing halftime shows, then this is a great
halftime show.
Hang on, though. What if, though? What if he's mic'd up while he's on the court? You down for that?
No. Is he going to freestyle? Like, again,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
With your life, J. Cole.
Like the old N1 mixtapes where, like, they'd bring the ball up in transition and dribble to the beat of the music, but J. Cole's, like, rapping as he gets ignored on the weak side, spotting up for a shot.
All right. Well, you won't be a Scarborough Shooting Stars fan. Classic. You weren't a Raptors 905 fan. I'll have to hold it down for the team. I'll do weekly reports on J. Cole.
Raptors 905 fan. That's not correct.
Really? Did you go to any games?
No, but I didn't say I'm as big a fan as you. I'm allowed to be a fan. Like, I don't go to the Carlton Blues games in Australia, but I'm
watching. We'll get you there.
I'm currently streaming the game on my laptop as we're doing this show. Like, I care about these teams. And I wish these guys the best of luck, this team, whatever. I just think that this is – we've done too much of indulging of J. Cole on this. And it's just – it's too much. It's too much.
All right.
And
okay,
it's not inspirational to me. And I can't wait for his next album that he writes about his ending of him deciding to retire, his retirement album. It's like, okay, man.
Okay. So maybe J. Cole doesn't have it in him to be as legendary as the next player on the A-list, Eli Manning. So – got a lengthy resume, as we know. Trophy case just slammed to the brim. Was a number one draft pick. He's got two Super Bowl titles. Future Hall of Famer. Married his college sweetheart. He has four children. Millions of dollars. Yes.
Okay.
All of these things are important for the context of the story. But he was asked what the proudest moment of his life was yesterday during a TV hit at the PGA Championship. And it was none of these accomplishments. This is what he said.
5 years ago, we're on a golf trip, and Peyton tried to, like, I was getting dressed, I'm sitting in my bed, he tried to tackle me, and he kind of overshot, and he got stuck between the bed and a wall, and he was kind of in there, and I gave him an atomic wedgie. Atomic means it's over the head. The wedgie, the underwear got over his head, and, you know, that was my proudest moment of my entire life, just, you know, getting the atomic wedgie.
The atomic wedgie over his brother. I see.
This is
Blake
great. I need the Manning
laughing.
Cast up with the telestrator and Eli like drawing. It's like, okay, so I reached right here, and what you want to do with the angle of the underwear is,
you guys. That's great. Obviously, this is so great because, obviously Peyton has been the guy in that family his entire life.
He's the wedger, not the wedgie.
Correctamundo. And the thing about Peyton is he's always been the, oh, shucks, Peyton. Oh, Peyton, he's just America's sweetheart. All his apple pie, Peyton Manning, and he's the sheriff. But we all know that Peyton Manning has a little bit of the frat. Like, he's got a frat boy side, all right? So he has probably pranked his brother in some vicious ways. He has done some things to young Eli that would make your, you know, the hairs on your neck stand up if you heard all the stories. So I love this one because, you can tell just even think about the way they interact with each other on the Manning cast, which is, hey, they love each other. They're brothers. They obviously get along great. They want to spend time with one another. But they have a brother dynamic, big brother, little brother dynamic to the core, which is when Eli makes mistakes, Peyton will be like, good question, Eli. Like, make fun of him right away.
You're an idiot.
He'll just talk over top of him. He'll do all kinds of things like that. So for young Eli to have a moment where he saw Peyton squished in that couch and he went full – I'm ripping these drawers over your head, Peyton. I actually believe him when he brings that up and says that's one of the highlights of his life. I think that's a factity fact. And I would say to the younger brothers out there, and I'm not one of them, I can only relate to being the older brother, but those younger brothers out there who have had their moment in the sun where they finally had their breakthrough, oh my God, this is it, this is happening, I'm getting the prank over on my older brother, that has to be one of the most satisfying feelings in all of human, in every human experience.
Humankind.
Look, I'll just say this. I'm the oldest. I'm home visiting family right now. I'm going to see
you
Matthew
got an atomic
Shane,
wedgie
my brothers later. Yeah. Matthew, you better roll up with a backup.
Blake.
No, he's. I mean, he could try, but
seems
not
like
that.
But Blake just showed you the Peyton Manning attitude right there. He
exactly.
just Peyton Manning Matthew, where he went. No, I will be no. doing the wedging. Like you are
not
such an older
chance.
Brother that you can't even understand the story for
can't
what it
fathom
is.
Fathom the idea. Like the first time
you're
he
like
beat
a bad guy
Madden?
That watches bad movies. Yeah. And does the yeah? Are we the baddies?
The first time
that's
he beat
you.
Me in Madden was the like worst day of my life. So, Matthew, if you're coming by later, you better roll up with a backup pair of undies because I'm on the hunt now. Because of Eli.
Blake totally missed this. Blake took the story like, poor Peyton. What could you imagine if this ever happened?
Yeah.
Blake's like, I need
How
to reverse
Eli
the course of Big Brother.
Eli bullying his older brother. Come on.
I want this
Eli Manning
thing.
Doesn't Eli Manning doesn't get the Manning cast without Peyton. How unappreciative can you be?
Yeah, I want this as a topic today. If you've got them, shoot me the DMs. Shoot me the stories at JD Bunkus or put them in the text line, 59590. If you're a younger sibling, I think this is more of a brotherly thing than it is a sister thing. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I'm a younger sibling, and I've never atomic wedgied Jordan.
Yeah, no, but
nor would I want to.
Yeah, but no, but there is something about your older brother, though. Probably not picking on you, but he would have.
What?
Yeah, had
his
the upper hand.
For me is Pylon.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's what
he still calls me that. I mean,
yeah,
sure, he's listening right now, and he knows.
Yeah, that's what I'm. But that's
Pylon.
What I'm saying. So younger siblings of all sexes. Give me those stories, the story you cherish of I got my older sibling with this one of those. I like those stories. So 59590, if we get them today, we'll read some of them. If you shoot them in the DMs at JD Bunkus, at Ailish4Far, we'll take a read of some of those too. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk to the older sibling, a bully, one of us, Ben Ennis, next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports 590 The Fan.